He'll station 1,000 extra cops in the subways, and he added Tuesday at a news conference that the city is testing new gun detection technology.
If we don't get it now, we're definitely on the pathway of coming up with some new technology that's going to help us identify weapons as well as guns.
Paul D'Arienzo, New York.
The previous program was Economic Update with Richard Wolf, heard Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. It's 1 minute past 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Off the Hook coming up here on WBAI New York.
The number you have dialed is not in use at the moment.
إن الرقم الذي طلبته غير مستخدم حاليا.
Le numéro que vous avez composé n'est pas en service en ce moment.
The number you have dialed is not in use at the moment.
إن الرقم الذي طلبته غير مستخدم حاليا.
Le numéro que vous avez composé n'est pas en service en ce moment.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If you need help, stay on the line and a hacker will assist you shortly.
Okay, let's get started because we had a late start here. It's Off the Hook here on WBAI. Emmanuel Goldstein with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yeah, right here.
And that cough you heard in the background was Gila out in Skype land.
Hello.
How you doing? And Rob, who so far has been silent, also out there in Skype land. Good evening.
Good evening.
Rob the Firefly, that is. And we're back after 2 weeks. We have all kinds of things to talk about. We have overtime coming up at 8 o'clock on YouTube. You can go to the 2600.com webpage and click on the link there at that time. But we have an important announcement to share with you now because this affects the future of this particular program. Yeah, yeah, the theme should stop. Because we, as you know, are a volunteer station. We are completely 100% funded by listener support. Listener donations. And we have a new requirement from us, for us, actually. If we are to continue doing this radio show as of June, we must raise a particular amount. And it's not very much. It's not very much at all. It's a monthly figure. And we could do it tonight. We could get this taken care of tonight for the month of March. We're talking a total of $350. That is the minimum requirement. It's the minimum. Granted, we like to do things to the max, but this is the minimum and will assure that we do not get booted in favor of somebody who does get more support. So if you become a BAI buddy and you pledge $30 a month, well, do the math, 30 times 12, that is $360. That's $30 per month as a BAI buddy. And right there in one phone call or one click on the website, our March fulfillment has been met. The website is give2wbai.org. The phone number is 212-209-2950. And I just want to emphasize the importance of us getting listener support because we don't have commercials. We don't have any other source of funding that will keep us going. And this is something that is very, very worthwhile. If you feel that you've gotten anything, not only out of this particular radio show, but this particular radio station, meaning WBAI, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with all kinds of diverse alternative material that you just can't hear anywhere else. If you've gotten anything out of all of that, then certainly some show of support would be warranted. And again, you know, I gave one example of one person taking care of this with one phone call or one visit to the website. and having a fairly painless monthly donation automatically taken out of however it is they choose to set it up. But this could also be met by a number of smaller pledges of people going to give to WBAI.org or calling 212-209-2950. On that website and through the volunteer that answers the phone, you will be able to get all kinds of gifts in return for a particular pledge, a particular amount. So feel free to peruse that and make your choice. But the most important thing is that we meet that goal. So we don't find ourselves, you know, putting everything in our boxes and leaving in June. This is a requirement that will continue for each month. And I don't think it's very much at all, you know, to ask in general. Seeing the number of people who tune in and comment and basically stop us on the street on occasion to let us know they enjoy the show. So please, show your support. 212-209-2950. Give to WBAI.org. And when you do, please email us as well to let us know so that we have some evidence that we are getting calls. OTH@2600.com is our email address here at Off the Hook. You guys have anything else you want to add, Gila?
As you are contemplating your gift to WBAI, a couple things to think about. Your employer may have a match. If you donate to WBAI, check and see if your employer offers gift matching. You may be able to double your gift to WBAI without working too hard for it. Piece number two is that if you call or you go on the website or if you send in a check, whatever you do, please, please let the people know that you're calling for Off the Hook. If they don't know you're supporting us, it goes to the station, which is great. But if they don't know we're bringing in enough money, we could, as Emmanuel said, get booted off the airwaves. And no one wants to see that happen. Well, I mean, sure, I'm sure some people do.
Oh,
but
there
we
are
don't.
People that want to see that happen. There are some people who definitely want to see that happen. But let's not make them happy. Let's keep going. We've been doing this since 1988 in one form or another. And there's so much to talk about, you know, so much in the world of technology. We're going to try and get through as much as we can tonight. But every week there is something new, and the hacker perspective is what makes it interesting. And that goes for everything we get involved in. We try to add that little flair to it. So please show your support. Keep us going. It really is a shot in the arm for everybody. But as Gila said, definitely mention when you're making the pledge that you're doing this in the name of Off the Hook. That way we get the credit and it applies to that $350 minimum threshold for each month. It's the beginning of March. So this is our first show of the month. So we have a few more weeks to get there. But I would like to get there this week. I really would like to get there this week so we don't have to worry about this. Fair enough? Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
Absolutely. And whether you want to make a one-time donation or be what we call a BAI buddy, which is when a small monthly amount gets donated directly from your accounts to ours, ours as in WBAI, because we here are volunteers, but it is a small donation that you could set up for the amount of your choice and not think about it. And you can be still supporting us automatically on a month-to-month basis. And the BAI Buddy program is very special to organizations like us because it gives us something that is so hard to get in the nonprofit world, which is a dependable income. We can look at our list of buddies and see, here's an amount of money that we're getting next month. And we can, you know, maybe pay some bills, maybe, you know, stock the supply cabinet, buy some more paper clips, do what we need to do to keep this radio station, this program, all the voices on WBAI, and all the people in this community to you. And this is all we have ever done for that. We ask for help. We do not sell snazzy things. We do not go out and do bake sales. We do not accept paid commercials. This is what we do. This is how we have remained on the air for generations now at WBAI. And this is the only way we'll continue to remain on the air is through the generosity of you, our listeners. So if you go to give2wbai.org and show us some support, we are all grateful. And the wider community out there gets to keep having what we bring out there.
I think we used to have bake sales. Did we? Do I have that wrong? Book sale. Book sale. That's a book fair. We used to have a book fair. That's what it was. every year we had a BAI book fair. That was, why do we stop doing that? That was a lot of fun.
Well, there are a lot of different ways to raise money at the station, but this is the tried and true regular fundraising period, and because of this amount we're working towards for the show, we're going to be trying to update a little bit more regularly so people know where we're at. But it doesn't take very much from a handful of individuals, really, who can contribute right now, being in action quickly this hour, mentioning the Off the Hook Radio Show. That small act will go so far keeping the operating funds up and our program thriving here on the air. It's what keeps us independent. I think that's the overarching theme.
Absolutely. And this is not a fundraising edition of the show, by the way. We are not spending the hour doing this. In the past, we would have a fundraising edition. We'd make a couple of $1,000s in an hour. Things were different then in all sorts of different ways, but we still have a devoted listenership. We still have a lot of people that believe in the place, believe in the show. So we're spending a few minutes of each show to get people to add to that number, and hopefully we make that number by the end of the month. It's not much. It really is not much. If we don't make that number, then you know what? We maybe are wasting our time. And I don't think that's what anybody believes, but I've been proven wrong before. All right. We've said all we're going to say on that for now. 212-209-2950 and give to WBAI.org. The gauntlet has been thrown. The challenge has been made. $350 by the end of the month. Can we do it? We'll see.
That's seven people at the $50 level.
Yeah, yeah. All you mathematicians out there can figure this out. Hey, we have this story was sent to us about 50 times, and it was good each time we read it. it's a vending machine at the University of Waterloo up in Canada. That's right. There's a University of Waterloo up in Canada. Bet you didn't know that. They have a vending machine that for some reason has facial recognition in it. It's true. And the reason this was discovered was because of an error. You ever see, you know, when you're walking by a screen in an airport, you see there's like a boot up error, Windows error, Unix, something like that. And this one had a particular error that said the exception unknown software. This is phrased badly. The exception unknown software exception occurred in the application. Okay, well, you know what? I'm the line above it is where it says facial recognition.app.exe application error. So that right away told SquidKid47, who happened to be walking by, that's what college kids are called now. They have handles. They were walking by, and they took a picture of that. And SquidKid47 pondered on some online forum someplace, hey, so why do the stupid M&M machines have facial recognition? And that has been the question of the month. It was posted on Reddit. That's where it was. Okay, the Reddit post sparked an investigation from a fourth-year student named River Stanley. And I'm told that's a name. That's not a handle. Okay, River Stanley is their actual name. And they were writing for a university publication, and that was called Math News. Really, there's a publication called Math News? It's a publication just for math. No, I love it. That's great. We need more things like that. Math News. Hey, I'll subscribe, especially if they print. That's amazing. Anyway, River Stanley sounded the alarm after consulting Invenda sales brochures that promised he read the brochures. Okay. Promised the machines are capable of sending estimated ages and genders of every person who used the machines without ever requesting their consent. Now, this frustrated Stanley, who discovered that Canada's privacy commissioner had years ago investigated a shopping mall operator called Cadillac Fairview after discovering some of the mall's informational kiosks were secretly using facial recognition software on unsuspecting patrons. And only because of that official investigation did Canadians learn that over 5 million non-consenting Canadians were scanned into Cadillac Fairview's database. Now, where Cadillac Fairview was ultimately forced to delete the entire database, Stanley wrote the consequences for collecting similar sensitive facial recognition data without consent for Invenda clients, like Mars, remain unclear. And Stanley's report ended with a call for students to demand that the university bar facial recognition vending machines from campus. Well, you know, this is simply incredible. This is an Ars Technica article, by the way. But I'm blown away. Why on earth does a vending machine need facial recognition? Why do they need to know the genders or the ages of people walking up to it to buy whatever junk they're peddling? Gilly, you have a theory?
I do, because I was just clicking around on the Invenda website, and they are those really hideous vending machines that don't have a window. They just have a screen so they can show you ads while you're buying something else. And Invenda claims that, you know, you can leverage the best of technology, reduce costs and monetize advertising. So the whole thing is, the idea is, you've got the captive eyeballs of the person who's standing in front of you buying a pack of M&Ms, for example, and you can advertise to them. And I don't know, if you use facial recognition and think, hey, this is a 20-year-old female, what else can we sell her? Ooh, tampons.
Wow. Yeah, I used to spend a lot of time in front of vending machines, but not so much anymore. So I'm not even familiar with what you're describing here. So you don't even see the products you're buying. You just see advertisements.
You see advertisements. You see pictures of what you're getting. This has taken over in a lot of stores. I think like Walgreens and 7-Eleven, as an example, they put these screens in the doors of the refrigerated and frozen section, so you don't see the bottle of water or soda or pint of ice cream you're picking up. You see an image of them, so you don't know how much stock there is. You don't know if the freezer section is broken and there's ice all over the shelves. You don't know what you're picking up, because it's just a picture of the platonic ideal of the product.
So you don't get to see the product you're buying. You just press a button and something you select shows up, but it could be covered in blue paint. You'd have no idea.
Exactly.
Wow, what a time to be alive.
It's sort of like a automat of sorts.
Yeah, but automat, you could see. You could, that was the whole point. You could see the food.
Yeah, there's like a little window.
Uh-huh.
But
that was the fun of it.
No window.
I miss the automat. anyway, a University of Waterloo spokesperson, Rebecca Elming, has responded after a time, confirming to CTV News up in Canada that the school had asked to disable the vending machine software until the machines could be removed. Well, wait, why not just ask for the machines to be removed? Unplug the damn things. Yeah, I feel like the guy on War Games. Can't you just unplug it? Yeah, I think that's what every student should do, is unplug machines that are spying on you. Students told CTV News that their confidence in the university's administration was shaken by the controversy. Some students claimed on Reddit that they attempted to cover the vending machine cameras while waiting for the school to respond, using gum or post-it notes. I'm in favor of gum. Well done there. One student pondered whether there are other places this technology could be being used on campus. You think? Yeah, I think it's being used all over the place. So absolutely, get your gum out and start covering these camera holes. Now, the conversation continues on Reddit. Some students joke that Squid Kid 47's face is what crashed the machine. That's nasty. Others asked if any pre-law students want to start up a class action lawsuit. One commenter summed up students' frustration by typing in all caps, "I hate these machines, I hate these machines, I hate these machines." You know, when you quote social media in news stories, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, and I would shy away from it. I really would. Rob?
The funny thing about just not going up and unplugging the damn things is, they might not be allowed to do that. These vending companies arrange very lucrative and binding contracts with venues like these, like the school, to place their machines there and have it up and running, and so on and so on. So if they were to just go up and unplug the thing, even when it's doing something terrible like this, they might have had, and I'm going to try and fill the role of our absent colleague Alex here, but I am not a lawyer, I'm just theorizing here, but I think they may have been in a situation where it might have been a breach of contract for them to walk up and unplug the thing.
Well, wait a minute. I mean, that if there's a breach of contract, that means the university had to have known what they were doing, that they were, in fact, surreptitiously judging people's faces and doing facial recognition.
That's very interesting, because the fact that they were doing this may have been buried somewhere in legalese in the contract, or it may have been part of a sales brochure that they got and they knew from the beginning.
So maybe the class action lawsuit is against the university, not the vending machines. Go ahead, Gail.
I mean, if I were a student, I'd be mad at the university, because who wants a just M&M's vending machine? Let's start there. But, okay, I have fallen down the Invenda rabbit hole, and I'm looking at the generic brochure for their signature products.
Hang on. You're doing this on a computer?
I am.
Have you covered the little camera thing on your computer?
I flipped it off. There's a switch.
You got to cover it. Use gum. Use whatever you can.
Even if there's like a physical switch that slides a cover over it?
I don't trust anything anymore.
All right. How about I just stick my thumb over it? Anyway. All right. So this brochure sounds like tech magnetic poetry that someone threw against the refrigerator and then printed what came out. If I may quote. Powered by a proprietary operating system and based on IoT, AI, and cloud technology, our Internet of Retail platform connects all self-service points of sale, creating an unmatched consumer experience and skyrocketing revenue.
Wow. Well, it's unmatched. I'll give them that.
And they're like, yeah, and you have this app so you can sell things that aren't even in the vending machine, and then someone can go and show an app at a store, but they already paid for it at the vending machine. This is... what's the word I'm looking for?
Can you say it on the radio?
No, you can't say that word on the radio. I know the word she's trying to say, but no, you can't. Maybe on overtime.
Surveillance.
What's the opposite of utopia?
Dystopia.
It's dystopian. This is Black Mirror. I wonder if Charlie Brooker consults for Invenda. That's my new theory.
Do you know how many times in the past few months I have said, or it's been said to me, this is some Black Mirror, I'll leave out the next word, going on right here, because it's happening more and more and more, and it's unsettling.
Also, that proprietary operating system they're so hot about advertising is evidently in this photograph taken by this Reddit user, Microsoft Windows. We all know what that error pop-up looks like.
Wow. I hope he had permission from the operating system to take its picture. Because you don't want to do that without their consent. Okay, so that's an interesting story, and thank you everybody who sent us that one. That definitely was interesting, something to discuss, something to be aware of. And I feel like going out and hunting vending machines now and learning a lot more about them. We'll see. Okay, this is a crazy story. Epic Games hackers. This is from The Gamer, thegamer.com. Epic Games hackers say they faked the whole thing. Yeah, earlier last week, a group claimed to have successfully hacked Epic Games, making off with 189 gigs of data, including information on users. However, they're now walking back on those claims, saying that they faked the entire thing so that they could scam actual hackers. Okay, you know, I take great exception with the use of hackers in this particular context, but it's a funny story anyway. The group is known as Mogilevich Online. I'm not sure if online is part of their name or if they're just known as that online. It says that it did this by telling would-be hackers, in their definition, it would sell them the tech used to get into Epic Games. Of course, if the hack didn't happen in the first place, then the tech and data they sent on would be useless, if they sent any at all. Mogilevich says that it sold this material to 8 buyers, all without providing proof that they could hack a company like Epic. This latest development is being reported by Cyber Daily and comes just days after the hack was first reported. Mogilevich claimed to have made off with emails, passwords, full names, payment information, and source code from its attack on Epic, and was seemingly trying to ransom the data back to the company. But now Mogilevich has completely changed its story. It can't be verified if the group's version of events is true or not, as it's very possible they did pull off a hack and this is all misdirection. However, it does line up with what Epic has said on the matter, as it previously told The Gamer that there was zero evidence that a hack had taken place at all. So lies being thrown around left and right here. But apparently naive potential criminals got ripped off. I guess that's the crux of the story right here. Mogilevich explains his process, saying that it faked the operation so it could gain new contacts to scam. Great business model there, guys. Really, really classy. The group says that in this regard, if all went according to plan, they say it did all go according to plan, as would-be hackers apparently sent over tens of thousands of dollars. We don't think of ourselves as hackers, but rather as criminal geniuses, if you can call us that. Well, that's half true, I think. The statement goes on to say they admit their aim was to gain access to new victims to scam, although, you know, I don't know if any of this is true, and Epic is yet to comment on this, and I just wonder how people take these things so seriously and get so deeply entrenched, but that's the world of gaming, I guess. Thoughts, comments?
I haven't thought of the term script kiddie in decades, but it looks like that's exactly who they were trying to scam, if this is in fact what happened, because, you know, hackers aren't the ones out there buying tools to, you know, mess with people like this. I don't think, you know, those are criminals, cheaters, whatever you want to call them. But I can kind of respect the ridiculous hustle if this is in fact just all a big scam to scam scammers.
Yeah, I have no problem scamming scammers, if that is what this is, in fact. But, wow, really, you just don't believe anything anymore. You just don't believe it.
Well, I think the weird thing, like, are these hacking crews or, like, their, like, names and stuff? Like, the identity, the sort of, like, identifying with a handle. I don't know, it kind of reminds me of graffiti, but it's like people are coming into it that have different definitions. Like, we talk about a lot of sort of altruistic or like innocent motivations, curiosity, and so on. That's our emphasis, but it doesn't like inoculate a world of hacking. Mm-hmm. Especially in a more adversarial, like, militarized internet environment and really kind of broken infrastructure and software all around us. But, like, there is this sort of fine line that people are crossing and may come off similar or like sort of imitating a lot of what we would like talk about in an innocent context as playful, but is crossing that line. Mm-hmm. And then, like, when you're going after different groups and stuff, it's sort of changes. I don't know. The motivations seem less like that. So, I mean, these aren't just people just taking on tools and stuff. And it's just sort of strange to me, because I think we have to kind of abandon that after it becomes this, like, lawless sort of play. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. We can't really defend it. It isn't, but they might still identify as hackers or be hacking, especially if they have handles and, like, crew names. How can you say that's, like, not, is that, like, a criminal gang? Or is that, like, I mean, if it's increasingly becoming technological crime,
right.
I don't know that some of the older characterizations we might have, I don't know if they apply as much.
Well, I mean, you know, we can't say simply having a handle is indicative of being a criminal. What we can do is we can point to our definition, our ideals of what hacking is, and say this doesn't match that. They can still call themselves hackers, and people can still believe in the media that that's what hacking is. There's little we can do about that, but I think we can hold on to what we believe to be the ideals that we've always stood by. And, you know, I guess time will tell if we're proven right or wrong on that. But, you know, as soon as you introduce ripping people off, as soon as you introduce financial elements to it, I think that's when you sort of start separating a little bit from what the hacker world is, and you're moving into, I mean, even they said that we're criminal geniuses. Okay, you know what? Go in that world. That's a different world, and different values, different people. And you might use hacking skills. That's certainly possible. But there's many different interpretations. And
maybe they're e-criminals.
You know, there's so many different words. Go ahead, Rob.
I'm just talking of handles and gangs and stuff. If anyone's curious about the name Mogilevich, apparently that's the family name of a big Russian crime family.
Oh, see, it's great to just get involved in that as well. It's just, oh, boy. All right, moving on. Let's go back to some good old American crime here. The 41-year-old man out in Oklahoma put in bids for vehicles in the thousands of dollars, but when it came time to pay, he altered the site to show a sale price of $1. And they're calling this hacking, too. Deals on vehicles and jewelry through a U.S. government auction website were a steal in more ways than one. An Oklahoma man pleaded guilty to hacking a website to buy the items for $1 each, according to federal prosecutors last Wednesday. Evan James Coker bought vehicles and jewelry in 2019 through web auctions held by the General Service Administration. The sales are intended to help get rid of surplus materials or items seized by authorities. Well, I guess he helped with that, didn't he? He certainly helped get rid of surplus materials. His bids were not unusual amounts in the thousands of dollars, but when it came time to pay, Coker breached the pay.gov website and falsified the true auction price to $1, the U.S. Attorney's Office said. Coker was indicted on 3 counts of wire fraud in March 2023, and pleaded guilty to 1 count last Wednesday. He defrauded the government out of more than $150,000 between January 31st and March 21st, 2019, the indictment alleges. Included in the $1 buys were a 2010 Ford Escape Hybrid, for which Coker submitted a bid of $8,327, a Ford F-50 pickup with a bid of $9,000, and a Chevrolet C4500 box truck bid $22,700. He tried to sell some of them later, and I don't think for a dollar. A sentencing date has not been set. 19 items in all were bought through the auctions, according to prosecutors. Coker used 8 accounts and prepaid debit cards with very little balances to make the purchases. Okay, you know, I have some mixed feelings about this. Clearly, yeah, it's stealing. There's no question about that. You're doing something wrong. But come on already, how hard was this? All he had to do was change the price on checkout, and you're charging him with a crime? I mean, whoever set up that website, that's the true criminal here, because they don't know what they're doing, and who knows how much money they've lost. Does anyone have any theories as to how easy this is and if that website still works?
I mean, on a normal sort of public sector website that was selling things with these type of dollar amounts flying around, I would say this is very weird. But for a .gov site and whoever wins the lowest bidder contract for that sort of thing, it's actually not so surprising when things go this wrong.
Well, I mean, it's 2024, Rob. I mean, I expected this kind of thing back in the 80s or 90s when we were still figuring out, you know, things like checkout carts and all that. But today, you know, just to be able to change the price to whatever you want to pay, unless that is an advertised feature of the site you're on, that really should not be possible. And I guess nobody disagrees with me on that.
Well, I just want to know how he found out, right? If it was widely known that this was vulnerable, or he found out on some forum, then perhaps their security team should have been, or other, you know, key actors that were responsible may have also been monitoring and been aware that so many people were figuring this out. Otherwise, was there some affordable way to like bribe somebody or get the information that he needed? Or was it just so glaringly obvious the way it was set up and this person had expertise? Just, I have so many questions.
Yeah, he can't have been the mastermind. There had to have been other people involved in this.
It's like a forum or something.
And I want more details. I think these news stories should give us more details. I mean, I assume the website has been taken down, so tell us exactly how it worked, because there's precious little in the way of information as to what was misconfigured, because there really is no excuse for that at, you know, in this particular time. And you know, You're going to send the guy to prison for this? How about you just don't give him the items? Or did he already he already had the items. We'll make him give it back. It was an auction anyway. They were used. There was something wrong with them, right? So I don't know. It's just we can learn from this. We can do better. All right, here's a kind of a similar story, but kind of different, and it's got a bizarre headline. And it's from a Florida media outlet, which I don't know the name of because they don't put it on their webpage here. Nextstar Media. Okay, that's what this is. Florida official's husband indicted on charges connected to alleged Fox News hack. Now, I don't know why somebody has to be identified as Florida official's husband. You could just say Florida man. I mean, why not? But yeah, charges connected to alleged Fox News hack. Well, I'm interested in that. Tim Burke, it came from WFLA. I see that now, the credit. That's obviously a media outlet. Tim Burke, a Florida journalist and husband of Tampa City Council member Lynn Hertak, was arrested on Thursday in a case connected to alleged computer hacks at Fox News. We're not talking about people at Fox News. We're talking about actions against Fox News. He was indicted on several federal charges alleging he participated in a conspiracy to hack multiple computer systems and steal information. Now, Tim Burke owns the media company Burke Communications, and an alleged unnamed co-conspirator along with him are accused of unlawfully accessing servers belonging to multiple companies and transferring their protected information. That's according to a federal indictment, which was unsealed last week. Now, this comes after the FBI raided Burke and Lynn Hertak's home in Seminole Heights, Florida, in May of 2023. Hertak said in a statement at the time that it was related to Burke's work as a journalist. She did not provide additional details. Now, an appeal filed by Burke's attorney in December said the case apparently originated with a complaint by Fox News after unaired footage of a Tucker Carlson interview with Kanye West leaked to multiple news sites. Now, the clips posted to Media Matters and Vice News included West making anti-Semitic statements and peddling various conspiracy theories. Vice also published a video of Tucker Carlson making a series of sexist and misogynistic remarks to members of his staff, according to the appeal filed in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit. Now, in May, the Department of Justice informed Media Matters and Fox News that it was opening an investigation into their broadcast, but said they are not the targets of that investigation. The DOJ alleged that Burke obtained the raw footage of the interview being recorded as it was transmitted on the server and saved it to his devices, according to the court documents. Let me just step in here and say, you know, if that's what you did, you intercepted these racist remarks and things that were not aired, bravo. I mean, we deserve to hear about these things. We need to know. And the fact that what they're investigating is how you got access to it, that's not really the important thing here. The important thing here is what a major network is allowing to go on, a major network that influences political outcomes in this country. We need to know more about that. And yeah, sometimes you got to straddle regulations a little bit to get information. But if this was a movie, we'd be cheering this guy on, right? We definitely would be. Anyway, the appeal stated that he merely found something newsworthy on a publicly accessible site. Now I'm interested. How did he get access to this? Burke is charged in federal court with one count of conspiracy, six counts of accessing a protected computer without authorization, and seven counts of intercepting or disclosing wire, oral, or electronic communications. So, you know, that latter part, and I wish Alex were here for this, but that latter part could be something as simple as simply showing that Kanye West is anti-Semitic as hell with his own words without getting his permission to do so. You know, and Florida is a crazy enough state where I think you would need his permission before you could reveal that. According to the indictment, the affected companies include New York One, which it's funny. In this story, they say it's a broadcast television station in New York City. Actually, they're only on cable, so the one thing they don't do is broadcast. but whatever, I'll let that go. National Sports League, never heard of them. Such a generic name, but I never heard of them. That's a New York-based professional sports league. Okay, but they apparently don't have a sport picked out. And StreamCo, really generic names here. A U.S.-based online media, guess what, streaming company. StreamCo, wow. Burke and the alleged co-conspirator, for some reason isn't named, are accused of accessing the networks of two companies that were using StreamCo devices. Now, the conspiracy, which began in February of 2022 and continued until the FBI raid, was coordinated through Twitter direct messages and Google accounts. Oh, God. People, you got to listen to the show. Do not trust these things.
These are the tools of criminal masterminds. Well, I want everyone to know these are hacking tools. This is how crimes go down.
Federal prosecutors allege the pair illegally acquired sign-in credentials and re-recorded the intercepted media onto another device and altered its metadata. The Fox News interview clips posted to Media Matters and Vice appear to have been recorded off a monitor using a camera. Okay, well, that's not a crime, right? Re-recording something. Burke appeared at federal court in Tampa on Thursday, accompanied by council member Hertog and his attorney, Michael Maddox. Hertog provided the following statement when reached for comment. I am confident in my husband's innocence, and I support him completely. I will not be making additional statements regarding this matter. Speaking to NextStar's WFLA, okay, they're related, outside the courthouse, Maddox strongly denied the charges against Burke and maintained that the case is about journalism rather than computer hacking. If convicted on all charges, he faces up to 62 years in federal prison. I don't care what he did. That is not something that should even be hinted at. That is insane. The DOJ is also seeking a ruling that would require Burke to forfeit a website domain and 20 computer-related devices involved in the alleged hacking, as well as $1,500, which is equal to the profit that federal prosecutors claim Burke made through his offenses. Okay, you know, if we're talking about numbers that low, we're talking about having to give up a website and some computer-related devices. This doesn't sound like a very big criminal story here. It does sound like something that's very much of interest as far as finding out what these people are up to in Fox News, the kinds of things that are going on there. And, you know, if you have a whistleblower or a leaker of one sort or another, you pay close attention to what is revealed. And I think that's what the story is here. I'd like to know more about that. And I'd also like to know how it was done, just like we always want to know how things are done.
Yeah, you were saying about like how would Kanye feel if these words of his got out there, and maybe he wouldn't approve of that. But he, from his point of view, I think there shouldn't be any problem. He was sat in front of a news crew, you know, in front of a TV crew, talking to a professional TV interviewer. Stuff he says should be fair game for public dissemination. I think what's really interesting about this is not what it says about Kanye West, because he's intensely boring, but it's about what it says about Fox. They had this footage. They chose not to air it. They had this this figure that they were interviewing, and they had this information about him, and they decided let's not show the viewers that bit of him. We don't want to, you know, we would hate to think that you know, our viewers know that we're interviewing a huge anti-Semite nutcase. It's their editorial decisions that I think are the big embarrassment of this.
What's crazy about this story is that we're talking about a guy being interviewed by an on-air personality with a camera, with a microphone, inside a room, with all the buttons pushed and all the power applied, and the crime is that what was recorded was seen. Yeah, what was recorded and was embarrassing to them is something that we found out about. It's not like, you know, somebody was spying on somebody else, following them around, going into their car, into their house, whatever. They were filming this. They filmed this deliberately. And they didn't like the way it turned out, and we're all supposed to take part in the conspiracy to keep quiet. Uh-uh. Doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I don't really have any sympathy for that. Like, producers of these things own the material. They've entered into these interviews and otherwise seek out this publicity and attention deliberately. And are assumed to have some kind of training to interact with these media practitioners. So it's not like they're unwilling participants and that there's any expectation of privacy in many regards. I mean, legally, but just like from a common understanding of what they're doing, it's publicity, and something they trade in. I don't see why the practitioners, the people that are doing the recording, have to apologize or feel any way about the subject of the recording's feelings. It's just, well, it's so backwards to me.
You're describing an honest journalist, but it was Tucker Carlson who was doing the recording, and he's as bad as Kanye West. They both didn't want this to get out. Both the interviewer and the interviewee both wanted it to be
right, but I mean the actual recordings mm-hmm. are managed other. Well, I'm just saying that the production side of it isn't necessarily even the interviewer.
Right,
they're just a on-screen talent that is interacting with the interviewee. It's the station, the TV station, ultimately, I think. I don't know. As far as ownership and who should be feeling any way about
somebody,
the material.
Somebody within Fox could have leaked this. But sure, apparently somebody was able to figure out how to gain access to it, apparently through publicly accessible parts of the net. I'd like to know more about that. Hopefully we'll find out more.
A lot of them use cloud platforms and so on. So
only have time for one
plausible.
More story, and that's about OpenAI is accusing the New York Times of hacking ChatGPT. Yeah, this is true. OpenAI has asked a judge to dismiss parts of the New York Times' lawsuit against it, alleging that the media company paid someone to hack OpenAI's products, such as ChatGPT, to generate the 100 examples of copyright infringement for its case. This is a bizarre story. It comes from the New York Times. This comes from Bloomberg. In a filing on Monday in Manhattan Federal Court, OpenAI alleged it took the Times tens of thousands of attempts to generate the highly anomalous results, and that the company did so using deceptive prompts that blatantly violate OpenAI's terms of use. Deceptive prompts. That means basically saying something to ChatGPT over and over again in different ways to get a particular result. They're saying that's hacking.
Isn't that how you use it?
That is how you use it. Now, the hacking that OpenAI alleges in the filing could also be called prompt engineering or red teaming, which is a common way for artificial intelligence trust and safety teams, ethicists, academics, and tech companies to stress test AI systems for vulnerabilities. It's a common practice in the AI industry and a popular way to alert companies to issues within their systems, similar to how cybersecurity professionals stress test companies' websites for weaknesses. In this filing, OpenAI doesn't dispute, nor can they, that they copied millions of the Times' works to build and power its commercial products without our permission. That's according to Ian Crosby, who is lead counsel for the Times. He added, what OpenAI bizarrely mischaracterizes as hacking is simply using OpenAI's products to look for evidence that they stole and reproduced the Times' copyrighted works. And that is exactly what we found. In fact, the scale of OpenAI's copying is much larger than the 100-plus examples set forth in the complaint. Wow, this is getting really interesting. This is getting really good. So the Times is suing OpenAI for basically using its material without permission. And what OpenAI is accusing the Times of is hacking them by trying over and over again to get the evidence from ChatGPT that it did precisely that. In my eyes, that is not hacking. That is using. They're using the technology. Sure, they're using it a lot, but it's designed for that. It's absolutely designed for that. Show me where, you know, the breaking in. Show me where something was violated. To say that they somehow violated a contract by saying the wrong words to artificial intelligence, that in itself is really bizarre. Rob, did you have a comment? Go ahead.
It's great that you can we're in a legal environment where a journalist can blow up a story about an entity, and that entity can then sue the journalist for getting the evidence that that entity is doing something shady.
Yeah, we live in that world. Kyle, did you have anything else for this story?
Well, I just find it I mean the use of this it's funny. It's because like they're sort of interrogating this this robot. So it will reveal its transgressions against the benevolent journalists, which is, I don't know. I mean, it's that's discovery. Isn't that right, Robot Alex? Nodding. No, yes.
He's not here.
And it's like just silly, I think, grandstanding. And there's certainly other ways they could compel OpenAI to garner insight into these decision making algorithms and how it's been trained or when and you know what that timeline is. This is something that is very much both of concern to the Times, its livelihood, its business model, but in things in what their expertise is. Looking into and understanding business models like this and technologies and asking questions. So I think they're taking it very, very seriously. And there could be all this legal back and forth, but the real detail of it is actually going to be quite revealing. And the more they clamp down and try to eliminate their ability to figure out how their properties were used, then the more they might actually trip themselves up.
We are out of time. Please write to us, oth@2600.com. Join us on Overtime at 8 o'clock. Go to the link at the 2600.com webpage. And please don't forget to support WBAI by going to give2wbai.org or calling 212-209-2950. And we will see you next week. Good night.
What's that I hear now ringing in my ears? I've heard that sound before. What's that I hear now ringing in my ears? I hear it more and more. It's the sound of freedom calling, ringing up to the skies. It's the sound of the old ways of falling. You can hear it if you try. You can hear it if you try. Oh, what's that I see now shining in my eyes? I've seen that light before. Hey, what's that I see now shining in my eyes? I see it more and more. It's the light of freedom calling, shining up to the sky. It's the light of the old ways of falling. You can see it if you try. You can see it if you try. Hey, what's that I feel now beating in my heart? I've felt that beat before. Hey, what's that I feel now beating in my heart? I feel it more and more. It's the rumble of freedom calling, climbing up to the skies. It's the rumble of the old ways of falling. You can feel it if you try. You can feel it if you try.
You're tuned to listener-sponsored WBAI New York.